And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. Our live shows are right here at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please remember to visit the website, podcastufo.com. Check out the latest blogs and forums. And while you're there, don't forget to like our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. We're coming at you live on the Dark Matter Radio Network. And you can catch us here every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can call in during our live show, or you can Skype us. More about that later. Make sure all you live listeners check out our new chat room on the podcastufo.com sidebar. It's an easy 1-2-click sign up. You can use Facebook, other social media, or you can just plain sign in with your plain old self. And I hope to see you there. It was a lot of fun. This will be our second week with the chat room. Last week was a plain old blast. Hope to see you on it. Our guest today for the show is Nancy and Bill Burns. They're also on the Dark Matter Radio Network. This is sort of a host-to-host. Aha, no pun intended. And we'll give out the details of their weekly show later on. I'm very grateful to Bill Burns, actually, because he was the second guest on this podcast some 80-some-odd shows ago. He was number two podcast. And it really was him taking a chance being on a brand new show like this. And so I am indebted to Bill. So they will both be on coming right up, right after the second music break. Sam Maranto is from now on going to be our Midwest correspondent. He's just plain way too busy to be on every week as our co-host. We'll be hearing from him soon, and he'll be plugging some upcoming conferences out there in the Midwest. I'm actually going to Chicago tomorrow, and I hope to catch up with him, maybe even record a short clip with him that we can play in a future podcast. We may be getting a new UFO news person in, talking to a few people about that, and we'll see what happens. This is a work in progress, as you know, but I'd really love to bring back the news segments in our show. Well, before we speak to Nancy and Bill Burns, Alejandro Rojas is coming in for a few minutes. So hold on for a second. We'll be right back. And make sure you live listeners sign up on our chat room right now on Podcast UFO. Hang in there. Alejandro, how you doing?
I am doing great. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. And thanks. You were on my first live show here, and you're back, and always a favorite. And I would really like to have you on more often, because it's always fun talking to you. And you have a very busy schedule right now because of the UFO Congress. So let's talk about what's going on with that this year.
Yeah, and first, thanks, and it's always fun talking to you, too. I think we hit it off when we met out there in North Carolina, and it's wonderful to have a new buddy in the field and to be keeping in touch. But, yes, we're extremely busy because we got a lot going on. First, Jason and Maureen and myself of Open Minds are going to be in Las Vegas on Friday giving a talk and also hyping up the UFO Congress, which is the biggest, one of the oldest and the longest UFO conference in the business. In fact, I think it's the biggest annual UFO conference in the world. I mean, we looked into it, and I don't know that there are anything bigger. So we get lots of people out here in the Phoenix area, this beautiful resort that we have out here in the desert. And we just get lots of speakers, I mean, across the board on the UFO topic.
Go right through the list of speakers, if you would.
Okay, it's a long list, so I'll do my best to go quickly. We've got Timothy Good from the UK. You know, he's written tons of books. He's been in this field for a very long time. Doesn't always show up on a lot of the podcasts that we all do because he's a busy guy and he's out there across the pond, as they say. Mm. But we're real happy to get him on the list of speakers at the conference. We've also got Aaron Sagers. I don't know if you've talked to him, but he's worth talking to. He's really cool guy, kind of a younger guy who is working with MTV, CNN, the Travel Channel, all of these places. He writes, and he's also hosting on these shows. He's at all the Comic Cons, and he runs a website called Paranormal Pop Culture. So he's kind of covering all of like what's going on in the entertainment world when it comes to the paranormal. He'll be speaking on that. Speaking of, you were talking to host, interviewing host to host, and we've got the host of Coast to Coast, George Norrie, will be at the conference. We've also got a group of scientists. We have Jeffrey Bennett, who's an astrophysicist, and he also is works with SETI. So he'll be talking about the search for extraterrestrial life in mainstream science, but also ideas about extraterrestrial civilizations. We've got Richard Hoover, who has worked with NASA, who says we've already got evidence for extraterrestrial life. Robert Schroeder talking about the science of UFO propulsion. Oh. David Marler talking about UFO triangles. Mike Clelland, Stephen Bassett, Ted Peters, Artie Sixkiller talking about Native American UFO cases. Patty Greer talking about crop circles. Kim Carlsberg talking about abductions. Kawani Lapsaritis, this is kind of new for us, talking about Bigfoot and UFOs. We have John Alexander, of course, talking about more of his paranormal experiences. A lot of people think he's just a conservative ex-military guy who doesn't believe in a lot in this field. But actually, he's really into the paranormal. He'll be talking about that. We've always got Jaime Musan, so he'll be back with the best UFO sightings from Mexico. Wow. This is a neat one. Glenn Steckling from the Adamski Foundation. So George Adamski was a famous contactee.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to get much information on him because this Adamski Foundation really owns everything. So some of the pictures and videos you don't see so much because they have the copyright. So why not have the people who own all of that come and talk about it and show it to us? So that's going to be really cool. Robert Powell, he's a good buddy of mine, director of research for MUFON, talking about a lot of the scientific research that MUFON is starting to do, and also talking about some of the radar data from the Stephenville case and an animation of the stuff they had found there. Another Coast to Coast host, Rob Simone, will be there, and then Don Schmidt, who is, of course, the Roswell researcher. And he's got a new book out talking about how, hey, don't pay attention, Area 51 isn't a big deal. Wright-Patterson Air Force.
Tom Carrion, is the one that, yes.
Mm-hmm, that has all of the secret info. So he'll be speaking also. And believe it or not, I got through the entire list. I didn't think I could do it so quickly.
Wow. Someone wants to know in the chat room if you're going to give out hugs there.
That's right. That's someone who listens to my podcast, and we have offered. I have told everybody if they come that I'll give them a free hug, and I volunteered free hugs for Jason and Maureen as well. So come get your free hug at the UFO Congress.
Well, another thing is someone just wrote in the chat room, they think Stan is more the UFO, I mean Roswell researcher, Stan.
Well, I would say I think that could be debatable. No doubt, Stan Friedman is the father of Roswell. He if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't all know about Roswell, most
That's
likely.
Right.
So he is the guy who started all of it. But really, the guy who's picked up the baton, and I don't think Stanton Friedman would disagree, has been Don Schmidt, and you mentioned his partner that he works with, Tom Carey, because they're now actively still going out there and getting getting witnesses and writing about Roswell, whereas Stanton is doing talks and working on other things. So it's great to mention Stanton because, you know, he's the guy who started it all, no doubt. But Don is really running with it right now and looking for new information all the time. And they come up with new information every so often, and that's always exciting.
Well, you know, after listening to all those guests, your speakers you're going to have there, I feel like I have to come out. I feel like
you really do.
I feel like there's got to be a listener out there that has way too much money that needs a tax write-off. It would have to fund me to go out there.
Yeah, you really do, because there's lots of people to interview. This is really exciting too. We haven't even announced it yet. Discovery Networks is working with us, and they're going to be premiering some of their television shows, some of their new TV shows that they're not airing until March.
Is this one of them in Canada? Preview. The one that's they're doing up in
one of them is the one in Canada, and it's a great show. I've been able to watch the episodes that we're going to be able to show. And a couple of our speakers, David Marler and Robert Powell, are on one of the episodes that they're going to be showing. Like you said, it aired in Canada, but not here in the United States yet. It is a really good show. I think, personally, it is one of the best UFO shows to come out in many, many years.
Wow. Yes. I have seen that. I'm on their, you know, Facebook page, and I see the different episodes they're putting up there. Real exciting. Real nice stuff.
Very exciting. You know, they do a great job with recreations. They do a great job interviewing some people that have done the best research on these cases, and they take everything very, very seriously. So there's nothing that's made up. Unfortunately, these days, reality, quote-unquote, TV is scripted. You know, they're giving, and it's frustrating, right? Because they'll ask a UFO researcher to come on a show, and they'll hand them a script and say, here's what we want you to say. And it's like, wait a second. I'm the expert. I'll tell you about UFOs. What do you, you know, have this prearranged script for me? And I implore any UFO researcher out there to throw the script on the ground and say, adios, I'm out of here. Because, I mean, it's just a very frustrating situation when it comes to these TV shows lately. But this Close Encounter show is more fact-based, and I'm really excited about it. I think it's a great show.
Alejandro, I have to say something now. I have Peggy, who's actually in the chat room right now, but she's also admitting our Facebook page, and she's out there actively every single day searching for any type of UFO news story. And a lot of them seem to be groundbreaking on open minds. Where do you find you probably won't divulge your trade secret over over the radio here, but man, do you find some stories in fast. So you have a lot of people looking, do you?
Not necessarily a lot of people looking, but we have just come up with ways to be efficient to find this stuff. We're all over social media. You know, people in this field really need to get on Twitter. They need to follow you. They need to follow us. They need to follow many of the other people in this field who are looking for stories and getting those out there. That's a great place. And there's a number of other sources yet. Yeah, I won't give you my whole formula. But we've developed this over years so we can be on top of the latest and greatest and get that out to people. We always reference our sources. We love to reference, you know, our colleagues, our other UFO buddies out there. I think a lot of people don't like to do that. A lot of people take our stuff and they don't reference us. And that's, you know, it'd be nice if they do. But our goal is to get the information out there and to keep everybody up to speed on what's going on, because I don't think people realize there's a lot going on when it comes to UFOs on a regular basis, on a daily basis. It's rare a day goes by that we don't have a new UFO story up. Today is one of those days, but that's because we're moving offices today and tomorrow on top of everything else with the Congress going on. And so our site's going to be actually be down for a period of time tomorrow and the next day. But there's a lot going on, so it's fun. It's fun to be able to be a news source for people and to be consistent, because a lot of the news sources in this field come and go and aren't around as long. So it's cool to be able to do that for people.
Wow. Hey, Alejandro, there are people in the chat room asking if you'll pop in the chat room if you've got a couple minutes. And I really wish you a great success another year. I hear about this every single year, how great that UFO Congress is. And I really am going to get there one of these years if I don't make it this year. Unless someone just contacts me after the show and cuts me a check. You never know.
I really hope they do. If there's anybody out there with some, and you know they're out there. Come on. You're out there. Give them a few bucks. Get them to the conference. We'd really love to have them. And yeah. I do want to just say, you know, to the Burns, it's great that you're having them on. They're pioneers in this field, so it's really exciting that you have them on the show. And I want to thank them for everything that they do. And then remind people, of course, you can go to openminds.tv or ufocongress.com. For all of our news, and UFOCongress.com on how to register and come to the conference. And the person who's going to donate the ticket for Martin, just go to UFOCongress.com and register him there.
All right, Alejandro, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So it's time for the break, and hang in there. We'll be right back with Bill and Nancy Burns. And by the way, they're going to be announcing some type of major story, so hang in there right after the music. Bill and Nancy Burns, how are you?
Well, good. Hi.
Or should I say, I should be smart and say, Nancy and Bill Burns, how are you?
Well, there you go. There
you could be even smarter and say, it's Nancy Burns, how are you?
Oh, please.
I have listened to your show, so I see how that goes.
Well, it's a rough show, and we'll leave it at that.
What do you mean by that? I love your show. It's fun. You guys are funny to listen to both of you together.
It's a lot of work.
Well, yeah, because it's like trying to move an immovable object. Bill is a professional and can do this in his sleep, literally. And I have to, oh, my goodness, I have to worry a lot beforehand and then hate, just want to leave the planet for a good 24 hours afterward. So this is not natural for me.
Well, you know, it can be stressful. You know, we were talking about this week how guests can kind of, you know, bow out on you and then you're scrambling. And, you know, it's a live show. It's a lot tougher than, you know, when you're doing a pre-recorded show, I'm finding out.
It is. And why are you doing live? What made you decide to do that?
I wanted the challenge. And I thought it would be somehow a better way to interact. And when I started this podcast, all the way back when Bill first helped me out, I wanted it, it's right on my website everywhere, to be an interactive podcast.
Yeah.
And so this really works. You know, we have a, I'm going to just put the call number out there right now. It's 603-967-4030. Again, you're welcome to come into the chat room at podcastufo.com. And I'll try to, the thing kind of scrolls kind of fast, but I'll try to get some questions in to you. So it is interactive more this way. How about yourself? Have you always done a live show?
Yes, exactly the same. I agree with you 100%. We felt it would give a little more honesty to a subject, I think, than if you could erase it and prepare it for listeners. So I feel like, you know, I feel like it's a better service would be my thought about it.
Right.
You know, also if I could get out of this in any way, I would put it off. I would tell people, well, we'll do it at 3, we'll do it at 4. Yeah.
So you need the...
I do.
Yeah, I understand that. Now, you mentioned to me earlier through email that you have a big announcement to make, and I'm wondering if we should hold on and kind of tease the listeners a little bit about that, or if you want to just jump right in and say what it is.
Well, I want to find out from Bill...
Do you have to mute your mic and talk to him?
No.
I wanted to find out from Bill if you know, Bill didn't even know that I told you to give you some idea.
Okay.
And so is Bill okay with our making an announcement?
I would say introduce it in...
I hear you.
No pressure, Bill. No pressure.
No. I'm trying to think of a way that... satisfies a lot of different constituencies.
Yeah, and it's not about a sighting or anything like that. We don't have new evidence at all. That would be cruel to tease that, I think.
Yeah, someone was asking if you were going to announce your divorce.
Oh,
nice, huh? No, that was last week's show, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You know, when you've been married this long, because we've been together since
1971. Thereabouts.
71.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, not 71. Not until we got together.
Well, 75.
So it's been a lot of years.
Yeah.
And when you're together this long, there's no point. I mean, if you can't get along at this point.
Yeah.
You know. I guess we could. You know. Yeah. I guess.
All right, well, why don't you just kind of spill the beans then? What's going on?
Well, yes, it's not about a UFO or anything like that, and I wanted to give a thank you to Alejandro, who was so sweet and said such wonderful things. But basically, I think people who've listened to the show know that we have had our license revoked. We can't use the name UFO anymore. So we've been in kind of a quandary about what to do. And so today, in a flash, it finally came together. We finally figured out what we're going to do, and so we wanted to. And I was so excited about it, I thought, since we were emailing back and forth, I thought, well, let's just announce it. And then when I started talking to Bill about it, we realized, you know, perhaps, but that's the beauty of live radio.
You're put right on the spot.
It's the process as well as the message.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I was totally unaware of what you're talking about to begin with, so now I feel almost let down. No, I'm just teasing you. So tell me what happened. You could not use, this was some type of trademark or something?
It was a trademark. I mean, UFO has been a trademark since 1998 when this entity, UFO Magazine, Inc., was created. And it was created specifically to bail out, to purchase and then hire the owners of UFO Magazine at that time, Don and Vicki Ecker, to purchase them. They were in a lot of financial trouble. I mean, deep, serious financial trouble. And this was after the book, The Day After Roswell, was published. And in the interview that I had done, they understood that I had started out and actually still remained as kind of the quasi-literary agent and representative for the motion picture company in the publishing industry, not in the entertainment industry, but in the publishing industry for the rights to Philip Corso and The Day After Roswell and a series of other books that we had planned. After that interview, which took place at the office where the motion picture company was, the Eckers had told me about the trouble they were in. I could understand what they said. I mean, it was very clear how they got into that trouble, and that the magazine was basically in danger of going under. So they had asked if I could introduce them to the people who had optioned and then purchased Philip Corso's life rights. Again, this was a motion picture deal. There was never any misunderstanding about that. And I did. And the result was that that entity formed a new entity, infused it with cash, and used that cash to buy UFO Magazine, buy the shares. Well, there were no shares. It wasn't a corporation. But to buy UFO Magazine, incorporate UFO Magazine, and then hire the founders, and then Sherry Stark, who was also one of the founders. Sherry and Vicki were the two founders of UFO Magazine. It was called UFO California or something. And this was back in the 1980s. And then Don, of course, who was one of the owners and was Vicki's husband. So they were all hired by this new corporation, which then went about to trademark the name UFO Magazine. We could all argue about whether that was trademarkable, but the United States Trademark Office agreed. And it was trademarked for magazines, for books, for internet, for television and motion pictures. And after 5 years, from 1998 to 2003, the magazine, and I'm sure if Alejandro's on the line, he knows that John Rayo has said the same thing to him, print hard copy magazines are really edgy as a rule, but in the UFO / paranormal world, there really isn't the kind of, we're not Soldier of Fortune, we're not Guns and Ammo, we're not Lowrider, Car and Driver, we're not those magazines.
Oh, speak for yourself.
Well, all I'm saying is, it's one thing, we don't have the broad product sales advertising base that some of the other niche magazines do. Guns and Ammo, Soldier of Fortune, huge advertising base. I know, because I was the president of Soldier of Fortune, Inc. Back in the day.
Which is kind of funny, because you've never been a soldier. And
I
you
was
don't
never
have
a fortune.
And
I have any fortune.
Well, I wanted to point out that folks in chat seem to have some questions. I love this chat. We have one also. And I think it's the greatest thing for a radio show because...
Me too.
Second
weekend, and I'm loving it. And
really?
I can throw a couple of questions that they're asking. Peggy wants to know, what's the most interesting case that you did in UFO Hunters?
There were two that really rank high in my book. One of them is the lost files of James McDonald, the professor of physics at Arizona State University. And the other one is this little known case. It's the Alan Godfrey case in the UK. And for me, those are the two most interesting cases because
Yeah, because, I know,
well,
yeah.
And the,
well, the Alan Godfrey case is a murder.
And so is the Jeffrey McDonald case. Jeffrey McDonald, all of his cases, we covered Lonnie Zamora, we covered Rex Heflin, and we covered the RB-47. And in that set of cases, and in the Alan Godfrey case, it was the perfect storm of you have a multiply witnessed sighting, lots of witnesses, independent witnesses, very credible witnesses. You have physical trace evidence. You have... From physical trace evidence, you also have a documentary trail, a document trail from the government that such a thing existed. You have a bend-over-backwards series of debunkings, real bend-over-backwards series of debunkings, swallowing stories that are so implausible that they're more implausible than the fact that it was a UFO. And you have all those things combined, and in both cases, you have a real crime. A real crime that you're talking about that's mixed up with the entire case that's related to the case. In the case of Alan Godfrey, it is something that he thought might have been a homicide, but certainly a very suspicious death that wound up being the subject of a national security letter he was forced to sign as a police officer, as a constable. He was forced to sign it along with the statement about the UFO sighting and abduction with physical evidence that he had experienced. Mm-hmm. So that was one.
Wow.
And the other one in the Rex Heflin case was a case of...
Leave Godfrey, because Chad is talking about it too. The Godfrey case is... you should tell folks that you have a true crime background. And so when there's actually a crime that the police can get their hands on, that helps UFO researchers a lot because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly the truth. That's exactly the truth. What caught my attention was the fact that this was a CSI case, a crime scene investigation case, that here's a body face up on its back in a terror death position. Dead, dead, dead.
What do you mean what do you mean terror death?
Well, the rigor had set in, and the guy was like positioned as if he were in a panic state. There was a frozen look of terror on his face. He was on his back on top of a 25-foot coal heap after a rainstorm. There was not one speck of coal dust on the guy. And if you've ever handled coal in your life, you know that try as you might, you're going to get coal dust on you. This guy had no dust on his clothes. Worse, no dust on the bottom of his shoes, assuming he'd climbed up. There were no footprints around the coal heap. After
Sorry about that. Hang on just a second. We have a call coming in right now.
Okay.
And it's a little awkward. That's why I have to do it this way. I have to interrupt. Hang on. Here we go. Caller, you're on the air. Who am I speaking with?
Martin, you're talking with Joe. How are you doing today?
All right. How are you doing? Thanks for calling in. Do you have a question for Bill or Nancy or both of them?
I have a question for Bill, actually. It's a three-part question. First of all, Bill, kind of stumbled for words, but I love actually watching UFO Hunters, and I'm a big fan of yours. But I do have a couple pointers, and one of them was about Dulce. I think you kind of went off a little bit off the bat with Dulce, but if you could just fill us in a little bit more on the Dulce base episode. Also, rumors were flying that you guys were approached by Camel Dudes on your Area 51 episode.
That's correct.
And, yeah. They supposedly took yours, and there was actually another show where they took some of the footage actually off that I was told by some other people. Along with that, did you guys ever find out that ball of light that came down to Area 51? And region, did you guys ever find out what that was?
No, we never did. That was, we thought at first that was like a meteorite or a shooting star or maybe even a conventional aircraft, but it didn't behave like a conventional aircraft. And we thought that if it had been a meteor or a shooting star, something along those lines, as it passed, it would stay lit. If it was a flame, it would stay lit until it passed over the mountains. And then obviously the mountains would block the light and it would go out. When Ted and Terrence established that the light had gone out well before the mountains and was traveling at a huge speed, faster than a meteor would under the influence of gravity, they concluded that it was a craft, but they could never understand what the nature of that craft was. So it went into the gray basket, basically. We don't know what it is. We just know it's not an aircraft, not a plane, and we know it's not a naturally falling object.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Now, to be quite frank with you, what about Dulce? Martin has his own theory, which, you know, if you go back a couple of podcasts about that and other people have, you know, they are very weary about the Dulce base, you know, it's a very touchy issue, you know.
It is. I guess the biggest person who was, and you could see him in the episode, who's kind of the eminence grease on Dulce. There were two people. One, of course, was Norio Hayakawa, who has his own theories. And I lean more toward Norio. And the other is Gabe Valdez, or was Gabe Valdez. He's dead now, the late Gabe Valdez, who was a part not only of the Dulce episode on UFO Hunters, but was a part of the Dulce episode on Ancient Aliens. And the thing with Gabe Valdez was he cautioned us pointedly. And then a third person, by the way, commenting on Dulce was Nancy Talbot of BLT Research that does all the crop circle research. And basically one of the things that Gabe Valdez cautioned us about was that what is going on in Dulce, he doesn't believe that it involves extraterrestrials. He believes that it's all human, but he said what's going on
Can
is
I
so
insert yeah. just something. I was listening to Dark Matter Radio Network last night, as I am wont to do, and I was just kind of listening to whatever was on in the middle of the night, and I'm not sure what show it was, but they were talking about the genesis of Dulce is the Benowitz story.
That's one. That's the Paul Benowitz story is one. But the other is also the story of Thomas Costello, who was the guard who said he escaped from Dulce and had photographs that he took. And according to the Jicarilla Apache, members of that Jicarilla Apache
Nation.
Wait,
I think that's the wrong name. The guard was named Phil Schneider, right?
No. Phil Schneider was somebody else. So there was Paul Benowitz. There was Phil Schneider, who had his own theory about Dulce. Phil Schneider was the one who talked about the fight between the aliens and the Earthlings at the lower level of Dulce. They were carrying out bodies. Thomas Costello ostensibly worked at Dulce, and he fled. He said it was so horrific he couldn't, and he fled.
Well, what are his credentials?
Well, he was a security guard. That's what he was. He was military. He was a security guard. He fled. And according to the members of the Jicarilla Apache, he was held. He was allowed to stay for a while where they were searching for him on the Jicarilla Apache reservation with families that kept secret where he was until he fled. He allegedly left behind photographs. Those photographs were copied by hand. John Lear, and then, of course, I forget his name, Tal. Of course, Tal, who was the guard, he had the photographs. In fact, I've got Tal's notes. He gave them to me when we were in Dulce. We were in Sonora, and he gave me all of his father's notes. And so I still have them. And Costello left these photographs, and the photographs were copied, and John Lear is the one who explained the nature of the photographs. So what Gabe Valdez said was that what's going on at Dulce, there are a series of these horrific scientific experiments, unbelievable, but it could not be revealed without damaging the Jicarilla Apache Reservation, and he said that it was part of his job to protect the Jicarilla Apache Nation, and that he was not going to say more except to show us this photograph that was an embryo, a fetus, a bovine fetus taken out of a mutilated cow on the side of the road that Gabe Valdez intercepted the strange black helicopter hovering over the carcass of a dead cow. Valdez and his crew got there, basically did a post-mortem cesarean on that fetus and took pictures on the spot and were stunned at what they saw. And when Nancy Talbot, we told her about it, she said, well, you know, whether it's aliens or whether it's not aliens, what you have to realize is this is a case where, A, they're testing for mad cow disease, but, B, they're using the cows. Bovine serum is the closest to human serum, and it's used for in vitro fertilization. They are using the cows as surrogate mothers for developing human organ implants. And that was so serious. So this was, you know, this was on the air.
I would love for this to come up on the next Republican Republican convention ticket. Well, actually, it did reach the Congress, actually.
Well, it did reach the Congress because Grassley, Senator Grassley, I forget there were two other senators involved, filed an amendment, basically a bill amending Title 18, which is the U.S. Penal Code, the federal penal code, making it a criminal act to hybridize species, to cross-fertilize the DNA of human and animal species. It is now a federal crime, and we got in a lot of trouble.
Now, let me help with this whole thing. I'm going to help you, Martin, with the chat, because it's a question I have. Peggy is asking about who is using the cows. Okay.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And so wait. Before you do that, when you found the fetus picture, when you've got the fetus picture, and by the way, those photos are kind of available.
They're on YouTube. So go to the Dulcie episode on YouTube and you'll see the photograph.
But here's the thing. That particular photograph, where was that cow found?
That cow was found on the Jicarilla Apache Reservation alongside one of the country roads, not far from the Dulcie, from the Archuleta Mesa, where the Dulcie base is.
Yes, and that's the next question. So who's having sex with the cows? How did the human thing get in there?
Well, let's just say that this is terrestrial. Big pharmaceuticals are experimenting with crossbreeding human DNA with animals, and cows are really great hosts. Cows are really good DNA connects. And what they were doing was trying to come up with some kind of a hybridization that could be the host for various human organs based on the human DNA, whose DNA it was that was implanted.
It makes a kind of sense if you don't believe in souls.
It totally makes sense. If you are, I don't know, Mitt Romney, Michael Bloomberg, somebody really a multi-billionaire, and you can pay for this, you have your own storage facility for your own heart valves, for kidneys, for livers, for lungs, you name it. You basically create your own, let's call it for argument's sake, a soma, a body where you store all these organs. And basically when you need them, you just have a transplant. But you know that the rejection issue is going to be vastly reduced because it's your DNA. So your body will recognize this is you. And so without going down the extraterrestrial route.
Well, but really quickly, just talk to Roger Lear. He says if you study implants, you can solve the problem of rejection right there. So you're going down a different extraterrestrial route, but you're going down that route.
Right. And imagine the military is involved in this because, I mean, imagine the possibility of having storehouses, DNA storehouses for soldiers. So that soldiers come back, they need new limbs. They need to grow nerve cells. They need to do a lot of things. Well, you could basically store this. So if you can mass produce human body parts and organs of all kinds, if you can mass produce that, and do it in such a way, by the way, that you're not alarming anybody by going to a farmer and buying his herd. You're basically mutilating cows and, you know, blaming it on witchcraft, blaming it on aliens, blaming it on UFOs. Be great. That's what one theory is that's going on. Another theory is, and this is the Paul Schneider Benowitz theory. And remember, Benowitz was duped by Richard Doty. So Benowitz was led down the garden trail by Richard Doty. But the theory is that the that beneath the Archuleta Mesa, and we have the technology to do this, it's not stunning technology, there is a seven-level base. Go read what John Rhodes has written about it. There is a seven-level base. And from the top all the way to the bottom, there's a mixture of human beings, human scientists, going down to the middle levels. It's humans and aliens working together, extraterrestrials. And at the very bottom, it's extraterrestrials. And they're working with, let's just say for argument's sake, mutilated humans. They're taking human bodies and they're interbreeding that with alien DNA. And when you see the sketches that John Lear has about human body parts floating in a vat, it's like a scene from a Jeffrey Dahmer movie. When you see that, that's the whole purpose, and that there was this skirmish between the alien scientists and American scientists, and supposedly U.S. combat troops tried to break in, and there was a firefight at the lower level of Dulce, and they were just carrying out bodies, and we were like obliterated at that point, and we finally reached an accommodation with them and let them go back to work. And two witnesses that we had, one of whom basically told us that when they got to the site, they were asking the local police chief about it, and he really confirmed that he was there when they were taking out the bodies.
Wow. Hey, I'm just going to make a quick announcement here. First of all, if you're listening on the Dark Matter Radio Network, you can jump over to my website, podcastufo.com. Join in the chat room. We'd love to have you there. A lot of questions are just pouring in. But I wanted to just take a little sidetrack here and just tell you about both you, Bill and Nancy, kind of a strange happening that happened to me a few months ago. I'm in the fine arts and antiques business. That's what I do in the real world. And I was dealing with a woman in California. We got in a conversation, kind of an interesting conversation. She said to me, "Have you ever seen a ghost in any of the estates and houses you've cleaned out?" And I sort of chuckled, and I said, "Well, I had something happen. I don't know what it was exactly." And I said, "Well, how about you?" And she goes, "No, but I've seen a UFO. I was with some good friends, Bill and Nancy Burns, in New Mexico." And I go, wait a minute. And so then I get into the conversation. You know, I actually do a show on UFOs and, you know, got into all that. Because I kind of keep the two separate, the business and that, you know. And yeah. So Steve and Amy McCrory.
That's right. We know them very well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They said to say hi. They knew I was going to be talking to you tonight.
Okay. Wow. Well, we know them very well. Hello to them. That was a whole evening. Wow, that was it.
Well, the thing is,
we're so cold.
Here's the thing with Steve and Amy. Amy, in particular, we got to be really friendly. They are publicity people. They do conventions and things, among other things. They have a company called the Business Muse.
Right. But
every time this weird thing happens throughout our lives, and it's the Ramones. We keep running into people one degree away from the Ramones. No, it's just it gets weird after a while. And Amy, of course, dated one of the Ramones like crazy and stuff. So
small world. It's just funny how that just fell into that.
Yeah. Well, now tell me how. Was Amy selling something?
No, it absolutely has to do. I'll just say real quickly, because it's a UFO show. They have. I also do a podcast on the antiques. I've been doing that since 2009, and their son is a prodigy antique picker.
So
he's been on. I've been working with him, and he's been on Queen Latifah and a few other shows. He's just amazing.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So he's doing really, really well. And I talk to them all the time, at least once or twice a week.
Oh, wow. Well, we knew them before when their son was just a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great kid.
Well, how weird. Now, the thing is, do you specialize in we'll get back to UFOs in a sec. We'll find a way. But do you specialize in any particular era?
Yeah, well, I've been at it since a very, very young age, since 14 years old. So,
and then what states?
Oh, I've worked in the East Coast. I've worked in California, Colorado, but you know my specialties are, you know, I don't really want to go into it in the show. But you know, fine art, period furniture, all that, decorative arts, English.
Well, I have to American. Find. I'll have to find your other podcast and then check out your chat on the other podcast. But that's all the places we've lived in. We have a secondary love of that same stuff. So
yeah,
well, Martin,
sitting in a Morris chair as we speak.
Yeah, behind an old desk.
Why don't we just do an appraisal on the air right now?
Well, we should. No. Do you know David Rago from Antiques Roadshow?
I certainly do. Yep.
Oh,
David Rago.
Been on my show a couple of times, actually.
David Rago, okay? David Rago, when I was a professor of English at Trenton State College, David Rago was one of my students. In fact, we live right across the river from David Rago. He's over in Lambertville. We're in New Hope.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're getting people on the message board. They don't want to hear antiques. Someone wants to find out about the camo dudes. He keeps
The camo dudes.
Yeah.
Here's the deal.
I think the footage is missing on those guys. It might be missing. They're saying.
They cut that out. And they cut it out twice. It's funny. They cut that out from the Area 51 episode. They cut that out from the underwater Area 51 episode. That's a whole other incident at when we were down in the Bahamas, and it was at the Autech undersea base. They cut that out.
Really?
There were issues, but what they didn't cut out was Area 52, which was the last episode of Season 3, and the episode before that, when we were actually surveilled by a black helicopter that came over real low, and Pat Uskert looked up and goes, "Oh my God, it's a black helicopter!" And then camo dudes came out from behind a guardhouse and basically were looking at us. It was really serious. And then when we got to the piece of land where we had a Bureau of Land Management permit to shoot, I'm telling you, the base police came flying out of the network. There was a patrol car. Then his captain supervisor, watch officer came. Then I talked him into letting us talk to the base public information officer, and that became the heart of the Dugway, Utah episode. But in Area 51 in Season 2 and in Undersea Area 51 in Season 3, those camo dudes, they knew we were coming. They were monitoring everything. They were out there, and they was basically, cross this line, knock this chip off my shoulder. And, of course, we didn't, but in Area 51, it was funny because we're driving along the side road, and folks who know that particular location know where I'm talking. So you're going down the side dirt road, and the plant life, there's the road, then there is scrub brush all along the side of the road. In the scrub brush are motion sensors and microphones. So they are monitoring your presence and your conversation as you move along. As you get to the base that says basically no entrance, right? Shoot to kill, lethal defense is authorized, which they don't do. But when you get there, you were on a surveillance camera. So we got there, the lights of a Humvee came on, and we saw so much motion behind, and it wasn't to threaten us. It was to let us know, fine, enjoy yourselves. Don't step over that line, because that's a federal crime. And so, well, yes.
Were they armed, by the way?
Oh, yeah, they were armed. You could see that they were armed. They had a lot of big weapons.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm going to change tack in a little bit here just to totally change the subject. I wondered what you two or either one of you can chime in on this. How do you feel about people that just take this and go too far with it? And they go out into the fringe and kind of, you know, a lot of times it almost seems like disinformation depending on what it is.
I know, yeah.
But what are your thoughts? And sometimes I've seen some people in the field. I haven't been at this all that long. But I've seen some people that I believe started out really good. Mm-hmm. And then they seem to have gone off the deep end.
And, yeah.
Why? What is your take on that?
Let me speak first because this is near and dear to my heart. I've been in this for 10 years, and having the rug pulled out and being told you can't use the letters UFO has been kind of a blessing. We've started Future Theater four years ago, I believe, and we just did a podcast number 182 on Monday night.
Wow.
And so that has become much more my life than quote UFO, quote unquote, because of our restrictions, we really couldn't stray very far afield. And for example, we couldn't do much with this fringe stuff either. And yet, if you're going to be honest, you might as well get familiar with the fringe, because your best friend or your best resource could turn into fringe, as you just said. But I think the number one thing you can cross off your list is if they're doing it for money, and it's they've become sort of a celebrity, and they feel somewhere along the line the big book, the big movie is going to happen for them, they have to stay with their story, and their story has to grow and enlarge. And I think they become confabulators.
That's
what I think.
You know, and I think maybe some of what they do or may do has to do with, you know, they have to come up with new material. I don't know. And I don't really want to point any fingers, but there was someone that's very well established that went very deeply into a crop circle and what everything meant without really, you know, looking into it deeply and kind of made a fool of herself. And you know. It just like they have to come up with a story.
Well, are you saying that it's easy to do that? In other words, I guess I want to ask you about what's your opinion about crop circles. Do you think that anybody looking at crop circles is crazy?
No, not at all. No.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I actually do. At first, I was really on the fence about crop circles, and I start to think that, you know, some of them could actually be of some type of strange origin. Exactly if they're extraterrestrial, I don't know. No one really has the answers, but there's just been so many witnesses to strange things happening. You hear the ball of light, you know, and all that. And you mentioned earlier Nancy Talbot, you know, she's trying to do scientific research.
She's done some phenomenal. She's done some phenomenal research, and she demonstrated to us the difference between the Doug and Dave faked crop circles, right? The snowshoe type crop circles.
Yeah, I think when it comes to crop circles, Nancy Talbot is right on the money. She seems to be consistently, but she got in a lot of trouble with, let's just say, the nuts and bolts crowd, which has always been my crowd. I personally have never seen a UFO, really. Bill has just seen stranger stuff than me, and people have taken him aside, and he's come back pretty shaken, not in a bad way, but in a whoa.
Right.
So,
speaking of crop circles, let me just put this in.
Yeah.
I listened to an old show. I think it was an old Art Bell show a while back, and there are people explaining crop circles that they were coming upon, and they were saying that the corn or whatever it was, wheat or whatever it was woven, almost like braided together. And
that's
something that just can't happen instantly.
No, but that can happen with microwaves. They are doing a lot of studies with microwaves, and they're finding that microwaves will braid. I came across a newish film from last year that really shows you in physical form what sound waves look like. If you know, there's an actual study of this where you put a thin layer of sand on a surface that can vibrate, and then you maybe run a violin bow on the metal of the, you know, tabletop stand, and you'll see the different wave patterns in beautiful sand, like mandalas.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, where was I going with that?
Well, what you were thinking was that it's incredible because in some cases you can't hear the sound waves, but they could affect
the microwaves.
The
so shape.
Yeah, the microwaves.
Okay, but the thing about crop circles, and in addition to Peggy, who's Peggy, what's her last name? The crop circle lady.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, are you not talking about Nancy? Talbot?
No, I'm talking about... I was going to bring up Suzanne Taylor, but there's a third name you just mentioned, and she has a new movie coming out right now, and she and Suzanne Taylor sort of have the same territory, and they're both fascinating women, and they both tell you fascinating things about crop circles. And then in UFO Magazine, a story we never got to really be able to do more with because the fellow from England, he's an engineer. He kind of got cold feet. But when engineers look at this stuff, they can fall into a very deep well of Alice in Wonderland. What is going on? Many years ago, some engineers put a lot of crop circles together and realized it was the cross section of a motor. A bunch of them.
Oh wow!
And then the other part too. Yeah, and then the other part, which has always struck me, is besides the braiding of the shafts of wheat, there are two other things. But the main thing is that the level of magnetite, and this is why these things aren't fake, that the level of magnetite in the wheat shafts is far more intense. In fact, it's so intense that birds will not fly over a crop circle. They will separate and they will go around the crop circle because that level of magnetite, there is such a magnetic field around a crop circle, and people have gone into crop circles and physically become sick. And I always attribute
that to a heavy
electromagnetic field.
That's where I was going. If the person you're talking about, when you said she went into a crop circle and kind of got weird, I was thinking, you know, that could happen to a sane person, perhaps, based on all this weird stuff where, you know.
Exactly. Precisely.
Now, have either one of you ever actually stepped foot in a crop circle yourself?
No.
Yeah.
We were going to when we were in England. But the schedule, because we were in England for season one and then again in season three, but the schedule was so intense. I mean, by the time we had gotten to season three, we were literally, the show was going up 2 weeks after we filmed it, which gave production only about 10 days to do the editing. So we were really curtailed in our schedule.
Wow. And I'm really starting to feel paranoid about the fact that that was the only UFO show that I know of where actual reporting was going on, and we were getting flooded with, wow, and we still are. You people have to report this. You have to investigate this. And maybe the government didn't want that much of a funnel, a focus, because it wasn't meant to be an entertaining show, which is why they ended up hiring an old guy like Bill.
Speaking of Bill, someone just chimed in there. You have a new book out?
The book that I have out just for the last few weeks is The Haunting of the 21st Century, which is volume 3 of the Haunting of America series. That just came out a few weeks ago, and a few weeks before that, book 1, UFO Hunters book 1 came out, which is the companion to most of the first season episodes and the Area 51 episode on UFO Hunters.
Wow. Bill, where do you find all your time?
I just don't do anything else.
I know. I mean, I just can't believe the volume of work you have done all these years, and then the UFO magazine. And
well, maybe it's because his wife makes his life very comfy and he can just
this
work.
This is true. This is true. Nancy does UFO magazine.
Of course. I meant to say that.
I do the books, and there you go.
Yeah. Okay, let's step into another thing that people often are on the fence about, which I was, except for a couple of cases. I still battle with a lot of what I hear, but there are a few solid cases. Matter of fact, next week we have Charlie or Chuck Fultz from the Allagash abduction. He is going to be on our show. Nice guy. I actually did a whole interview with him and Jim Wiener, but the background noise was so loud at a conference that I never put that up. So he's going to be live with us next week. Abductions. Now, I think Travis Walton is as solid as it can be. The Allagash is certainly very interesting. Betty and Barney Hill, of course. The Brooklyn abduction, there's a number of them that are real solid. And then a lot of them, I just don't know. You know, I just am totally on the fence about. And I wanted to hear your opinions. Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm really I see the full spectrum of this, and we had one I mean, I know a lot of people who talk about abductions and who claim to have been abducted. So, I mean, yes, I've heard many, many stories and seen the metallic implants.
Well, what do you think at base? Do you think that there's some truth to anything of this?
I think, given the Betty and Barney Hill and the Travis Walton stories, there is truth, okay? But I also see that there are people who claim UFO abductions and UFO contact that have that basically have zero evidence of it, zero. Like there are no other people involved, just them. And the stories they tell are just so improbable about why they're the contacts and they're the, you know.
Well, let me ask you about a current guy who's making, wait, there's a guy making the rounds right now whose story I think is very compelling. And I think he's been on the shows. His name is Jim Sparks.
Oh, Jim Sparks. He's been on the show. Yeah.
Not our show, but we did a piece on him when his book came out, and I actually read his book. I found it gripping. And then he was on some shows where they asked him, well, how did you go to the bathroom on the thing? And supposedly he fumbled with his answer, and they said, well, he's got to be making this up.
I actually asked Travis Walton that I saw him last summer. I said, Travis, I know this is a really strange question, but I want to ask you, has anyone ever asked the question, if you were on a craft for 5 days, what did the restrooms look like?
Yeah.
And he said, it felt like an hour to me. He said, that's all I can say.
You know. Well, of course, you know, I asked Travis, and I'm sure you did too, was there really goo all over you? Did they, you know, like, did you wake up in a honeycomb? Are they insect-like? And he said, no, that was all made up. So
right. They did that for the movie, and he let them have that.
And you know what? I don't totally believe him when it comes to that. I have a feeling he's been regressed a few times and doesn't want to go too – I have a feeling – I want to know where the movie people got those ideas. If not – I wonder about that.
Okay, but here's the thing about Travis Walton, and this is now public information. He said this at last fall's Philadelphia area MUFON conference, okay? And I interviewed him, and he said it on our radio show. Right, he said it on Future Theater. And it's this. Nancy asked Travis, are there any physical effects that you had after your abduction? You know, looking for some sort of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And Travis kind of hemmed and hawed. Ah, I don't want to go into it. I don't want people to get... Travis, come on. Finally, he said this, that after he came back, very gradually, he began to feel, and now it's like in full force, that he had the ability to communicate with other people's minds. That was his ability that he had, and he developed that ability. But he doesn't do it. He shuts himself off because he feels it's intrusive.
Wow.
But that was something he developed after his experience on the spacecraft. And that reminded me of the Alan Godfrey story in which before all of this happened in Todd Morton in England, before all of this happened, Alan Godfrey was trying to make an arrest. He was a police officer, and he got smashed by the people he was trying to arrest in the testicles, smashed so bad that he basically was told by the doctor, you will never, ever have children. After he had his UFO encounter, and it was a diamond-shaped craft swirling in the middle of a road outside of Todd Morton, after he had that abduction and he was regressed, after that, his sexual drive and his ability to have children returned. Now, he attributes that to normal healing, but he was told he would never have children.
Wow. Hmm. Isn't that something? You know, the person I'm going to be interviewing next week, I just talked about Charlie Fultz. When I was speaking to him and Jim last summer, they were talking about every single person that went through this supposed abduction changed dramatically, and Jim's brother Jack all of a sudden became a mathematician and actually worked on something like the Hubble or something like that. I mean,
really
pretty amazing stuff. And his artwork,
you mean from Allagash?
That's right. him, his artwork totally changed. I'll be talking about that next week.
Yeah, the artwork. And in fact, I would love for you, okay, this is your next week's show?
Right. Mm-hmm.
We did one of the best issues, one of my favorite issues, came to us from a guy who's now considered, he is a fraud. He was a complete fraud. His name is Phil Imbrogno. And he brought us this story. I personally met Phil. Well, I impersonally met him. I met Phil, and, you know, I wasn't that impressed. He was just like a little guy, kind of like a quiet guy, and he didn't seem like a way intellectual guy at all, you know, MIT. He didn't seem like MIT at all. But he brought us this story that I published and put on the cover of the magazine, and it's on the site. I've taken down subscriptions because we're getting in trouble for what do we do, but I figured it all out today. That's why I wanted to announce it. Finally figured out what we're going to do. But so the magazine's on the front page. It's on the, you know, it's just there because I love it so much. It's this drawing this man made, this man who was a janitor. Something happened to him. Something, he was abducted or something. I don't remember, but he was a nobody, and he started doing these drawings. And he described it as after this stuff happened to him, he would look down at the graph paper after he had the urge to go to the store and buy graph paper and colored pencils and stuff. Little dots would show up right where he was supposed to like draw his lines, like in light.
You mean like he would see these, imagine these? Do you think? Is that
Hello?
What you're saying?
He would actually see these in his mind.
Wow.
And he could then put them on paper in these very intricate designs.
Wow. Isn't that interesting?
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, what happened?
I don't know.
Are you...
Okay, so how much of the story got lost out of curiosity?
No, we heard everything. I think we heard everything.
Okay, so and the little dots showing up on the graph paper?
Yeah,
the little dots. Yeah, right.
I'm having deja vu here. All right, someone wants to know what you think of Bob Bigelow.
I've never met Bob Bigelow. I only know stories about Bob Bigelow, but the one story about Bigelow that I'm not going to tell you who told me because he asked me to never use his name in connection with this, but he knows Bigelow. He said that one of the things motivating Bigelow is that when he was very young, he had a personal UFO encounter, and he's been itching to find out more of that encounter his entire life.
Ah.
Hence his interest.
Wow. And another thing that was in the news recently, someone new just popped into our chat room. By the way, if you're listening to Dark Matter Radio Network, you can jump over to my website, podcastufo.com, and sign right in the chat room. Or you can call the show, 603-967-4030. Or you can Skype Marty Willis, MARTYWILLIS, one word. So the question is anyone going to bring up the moon photo? Mm-hmm. And that's a recent moon photo. It's very tricky. I don't know if it's lights, but or what it is, a little triangle spotted on the moon with lights on it. Have you looked into that at all?
Not at all.
I've looked at it. I've looked at it, and people have written about it, and I don't know what it is, but and I don't even know if it's real. But the two moon photo stories, which, although not addressing this little dark triangle, tiny triangle on the moon, while not addressing that, address the larger context of anomalous objects on the moon, the most important of which came from Donna Hare, who was an executive at NASA, and she was in the photo processing department. And in one of the photo processing radio transmission downloads from the moon, one of the photos that was developed was of an artificial object, call it a ship if you want to call it a ship, but an artificial object on the lunar surface. And at that processing center...
Well, I'm looking at it now. It's pretty artificial looking, this one.
And at the processing center, there was a... One of the photo processors was using an airbrush. This is before Photoshop. Was using an airbrush to cover over the photo. And Donahue was astonished, saying, why are you doing that? Why are you covering, faking a photo? And what the guy said was, it is the policy of NASA not to reveal anomalous objects on the moon that are not supposed to be there.
Wow. Hmm. Wow. Well, you know, it's the same thing with Mars. You know what I mean? Now, recently, we have this rock that just jumped
in front of
yeah.
Yeah. It's a snail.
Well, see, it's something I think it's things like that. I'm feeling particularly paranoid these days. And I think it's things like this. This is the drip, drip, drip that we need to have. It's sort of like each of these things are going to affect different groups of the population differently. For example, the rock on Mars will freak out the rock people. We have an actual subsection of UFO-dom of people who are involved with rocks. I have a box of rocks downstairs right now that came, and they're heavy, and we're going to send them to John Ventry. And if you go all the way back to the Dero,
Pennsylvania, John Ventry?
John Ventry from Pennsylvania, yeah.
Yeah, because the thing is, this fellow who sent the rocks thinks he's seeing creatures in the rocks. And he's got them all carefully wrapped, and then he takes photographs of them, but I can't see the creatures. And it's like,
and he sent more photographs today. I got a whole envelope full of photographs of
rocks. Yeah, but see, what I'm saying is, I bet you, let's just say for argument's sake, that nobody's crazy, and there are people who have more information than others, and sometimes they don't process it very well. But if this is the case, the rock photo, for example, on Mars, will make this particular guy crazy. It's all about the rocks. And I think, what if there is an alien presence? And what if it is weird? And what if we have to become accustomed to the news of the weird? So that eventually we just don't freak. Like, for example, right now, I never would have thought we would have ever put up with the TSA. But we do. We let them take our shampoo and throw it away, and expensive stuff sometimes. And we just do it. And I never thought we would. So I think the government is hoping we'll become that calm about UFOs. And I think these little stories, like an anomaly on the moon like that, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, if you wanted to be conspiratorial about it, which we are, but if you wanted to be conspiratorial...
I'm laughing at Chad. Wait, let me just say this. You know, R.E. the Rocks, Peggy from Chad is saying, and you let them stay in your house?
Well, if they come out, you know, we'll let you know. But no, if you wanted to be conspiratorial about this, let's just say in science fiction land, so anybody watching can write a screenplay on this, but in science fiction land, let's just say that we in the United States, but probably in the rest of the world, have a timetable. And the timetable is you will have X number of generations before we will disclose our own presence, a presence intimately involved with the comings and goings on your planet. So it's not just we are from outer space, we mean you no harm. It's not that. It's literally they are here, they've been
okay,
here.
Okay, but what about, okay, so R.E.
Okay, so if that's the case, R.E.
Iran,
that. Okay.
The Iran thing?
Well, no, what I'm saying is R.E. that.
The Iran thing says that the tall whites are actually involved in government.
Oh, that's that just came about through, this is, that came out through something that Paul Hellyer said, and it was regurgitated, the press got a hold of it over there. And I think it even went to the Washington Post or something.
That's a story that's not where I'm going. I mean, if I wanted to go there, I could talk about what I was told about alien presence on Earth in terms of powerful figures from one of the people who was on our show who had written the Kameda report. But that aside, let's just say that...
Had written the report?
Yeah, he'd written... He translated the Kameda report from French to English.
He didn't write it. He just...
Well, all right, you two, stop arguing. It's live.
No, he compiled it. What I'm suggesting is that what the government is doing by gradually cowing the population, letting us accept what Nancy said. You accept the fact that if you have 1/2 ounce more of shampoo in your bag than you're allowed, out it goes into the bin. They can take it home and enjoy it.
Or if you want to crochet on the airplane.
There you go. That's right. So as we get more and more cowed into accepting whatever the government says is right, as we do, when the gradual seeping, because the government is being forced to seep it, of an alien presence here comes out, we will accept it. And I think that's part of what's going on.
So am I taking that you're saying this is like a slow process that we're just being fed a little bit, little bits and pieces to kind of get used to this something that could be going on?
Yes, because the big picture
challenges
everything.
Let me really quick say why I think that's the case, why it's a provable reality. Look at how the mass media gives you a story on the left or on the right or on the middle, quote unquote, all three. You get something on TV, and now that we have the internet, we can actually see the TV process being served. It's almost like we can watch behind, the sausage being made. You can see it. And how they handle UFOs is hilarious. Hilarious. They still treat it like it's the silliest, and the only silly story left.
Mm-hmm.
Marijuana is not a silly story anymore. So now it's just UFOs. And they really, to a person, would never say that it's not silly. And just everything, I think about it, 10 years wasted. But anyway.
A question here that someone wrote this afternoon when they knew that you were coming on the show. A gentleman named Ray, he wants me to ask Bill what you can tell us about the U.S. Army that stole a UFO that crashed from Mexico, from the Mexico Army?
Oh, that's Mexico's Roswell. And this was the Noe Torres Ruben Uriarte episode, which I think episode 2.
Well, no, there's more, there's 2 of them, but go ahead.
Right, right.
Hey, you'll like this, Martin. We have, I have alphabetized our guests.
Okay, so this is Ruben Uriarte, and then Mexico's Roswell, and the story is that around the U.S.-Mexico border near El Paso, it's heavily, heavily electronically fortified, and radar operators at the base picked up a UFO coming in hard from the Gulf of Mexico toward Texas. And they were getting ready. And suddenly the UFO veered off to the left. And at the same time, a private plane was flying from Texas to Mexico City. And wham, the two of them collided. The UFO clipped it. It went down. The plane went down in the Cuyami Desert, northern Mexico, state of Chihuahua, in the Cuyami Desert. And that was back in like 70s, I think. Well, and there are witnesses who saw that explosion. And that's the news about that story came out in this strange document called the Deneb Report. Deneb after the star Deneb. The Deneb Report. And it circulated. It finally wound up with Leo Sprinkle. And Ruben Uriarte and Noe Torres read it. And they wrote the book Mexico's Roswell, the first book about this particular case. But this collision and this total and what happened. And what happened was the Mexican army sent a unit into the desert to retrieve the object. And they were taking it back on flatbed trucks along with plane parts, but mainly the object. And the United States Army was monitoring all the radio traffic between the Mexican Army unit and the base, the way they were going. And suddenly the radio traffic stopped. It was total silence, which was very strange. So what we did was the Army flew a reconnaissance craft over that area. And what they found was that the convoy was stopped dead along the road, and bodies of Mexican soldiers were all around the trucks, as if there was some strange virus that had taken their lives immediately. Well, the Army sent a hazmat team. a nuclear biological chemical team, NBC unit. They sent that unit across the border. Believe me, that border is ours as well. They sent that into it, and they basically blew up parts of the plane that they believe were contaminated. They dug a mine in the desert, braced the mine with timber, put the plane parts inside, blew it up, started a fire, put a fence around it, left it, and carried the UFO material to the Centers for Disease Control to see what it was that killed the soldiers. Wow. And this story was only the result of the Denham report. Nobody else knew about it. So and that's the story. What we did was we went to that spot in the desert, designated, identified in the Deneb report, and we found the mine. We found where a mine was dug. And imagine a mine dug in a desert. We found the mine. There was higher radioactivity in that pit than the surrounding area. We saw the fence around the mine. We saw the soil over the mine that had been permeated with oil, a semi-volatile liquid. We went in the mine and retrieved the parts of the aircraft along with United States Army marked, U.S. government marked cans of petroleum.
Now, was this actually in the show?
This was in the show. Go to season one, Mexico's Roswell.
Now, were there things that you found? One question just came to mind. Were there any, like, new evidence found after you would go and do a show? And then I'm sure with all the publicity, people must have come forward.
Yes, that's the thing. That's the thing. They were finding stuff from season to season. It was kind of building. This thing could have, I'm telling you, a good show like this, and somebody else could start one, the government would probably stop you. I guess the channels aren't going to show it. It could solve the puzzles. People have come forward. Lots and lots of people come forward, adding to these stories. They could have revisited every story in the show and moved the dial a bit. It's astounding, really.
You could actually UFO Hunters too. The revisit.
You could. I mean, there were things that are not in the show or that the network. See, I really. Well, because the CIA guy told me flat out, you know, this ain't Unite. You're getting canceled. We just don't want, you know, the higher ups, the powers that be. You stepped on some really big toes at Area 51, toes you never want to step on. And in addition to the soaring budgets we had. But no, I mean, there were things that the network went to great lengths to debunk. Other production companies went to great lengths to debunk after the initial story broke on our show. And the one for me was Lloyd Pye's Star Child. That to me was why a production company went out of its way to debunk that story with absolutely information that was irrelevant to the argument that Lloyd Pye was making. And Lloyd Pye could have, the late Lloyd Pye, could drop on the table the genome studies of the Star Child skull and demonstrate that no DNA sequence in that skull matched any DNA sequence in the NIH database. None. This is not human DNA. Mm-hmm. You don't see that in that show. And the same thing with the Flatwoods Monster show. The big issue in the Flatwoods Monster story is not
They ruined that.
Is this all on the editing floor that these things happened?
No.
No, guys. I'm talking about a wholly different show.
Nancy would agree with me on this. Yeah. No, you would agree with me on this, that they set out to destroy that show.
But here's the other thing. You guys were talking before we came on about being handed a script. Well, in the case of UFO Hunters, Bill wrote – Bill was one of the main researchers for the show. They wouldn't let me – they wouldn't have anything to do with the magazine for reasons I don't understand, because that's a great resource. But nonetheless, it was really researched. And not just Bill, of course. I mean, people say that's the reason it's so lousy.
No. It was Dave Pavone and, it was Dave Pavone, James Fox put together.
Yeah, but here's what we have to, we only have a few more minutes. And I just did want to say really fast that as I said, we've come to a decision. We've figured out what we're going to do. And I was going to say that I'm going to let the folks at Dark Matter know first, and we'll kind of announce it that way. You know, so in other words,
we have to talk first.
I won't say it tonight, but Martin, you will be the first to know when I'm. And that way, you can say, well, okay, that was stupid. Or
I'll
you could
you
say,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the thing that, the point I want to get back to is that after we aired, other production companies bent over backwards to use evidence that was, to use arguments that were so implausible to deny points that we made in the show. And I mean, one of it was the 1952 aircraft battle over Washington, D.C. that everybody saw on television.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right. And that Harry Truman said he said on the radio, these are UFOs. We know what they are. There was that. There was Lloyd Pye's Star Child skull. There were the Arizona lights, the Phoenix lights. Other shows have gone out of their way using crazy arguments.
That's right. You know what? I hate to say this, but we are out of time. Thanks so much for coming on, guys. And we'll have to do this again.
Yeah.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it for our show today. If you missed any part of this show, you can catch it as a podcast and a whole bunch of other free podcasts on our website, which is podcastufo.com. Also, you can check out links to the stories in our show notes, as well as joining in the conversation in our forums. I want to thank everyone that helped out today, including Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for our music, Keith Rowland, the producer of Dark Matter Radio Network, as well as Peggy Shunning for adminning our Facebook page. Remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO and astronomy news. You can check us out live next week right here and every week after at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 1 a.m. UTC, right here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Remember to keep your eyes to the sky and your curiosity high. This is Martin Willis, and bye for now.